From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council. An honor to be sitting in today for Tony while he's still in Israel. And it was an incredible program for Tony to bring Washington Watch to us from Israel yesterday. If you were not able to see that broadcast, I encourage you to go back and view it. You can do so by going to TonyPerkins.com. It was a powerful program. All right, coming up on this program tonight, and by the way, before I get to that, let me just say, because while Tony is there, we are having a Stand for Israel prayer campaign. Not much time left, but we're encouraging you to join us in praying for Israel. If you'd like all the details for that, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, coming up on the program today, this morning, on the Senate floor, Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in U.S. history, delivered a blistering attack on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
We should not be forced into a position of unequivocally supporting the actions of an Israeli government that include bigots who reject the idea of a Palestinian state. At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
Unbelievable. Why have Democrats abandoned support for Israel? Is this really about Gaza, as they want you to believe? Or is this about getting votes for the 2024 election here at home? I'll be talking with Texas Congressman Randy Weber about that in just a moment. And speaking of campaign stunts,
many of you have asked, why am I here at this facility in particular? And I will tell you, it is because right now in our country, we are facing a very serious health crisis. And the crisis is affecting many, many people in our country, most of whom are frankly silently suffering.
All right, that, of course, was Vice President Kamala Harris today, and she was speaking about a very serious health crisis. What was she referring to? Another outbreak of COVID? Heart disease? Cancer? No, the very serious health crisis to which she was referring to is abortion. She made those remarks during her visit to an abortion mill today in Minnesota. That makes her the first sitting vice president ever to set foot in the facility for killing babies. Once again, we see how extreme the Democrats are for pushing abortion. How should those of us working to create a culture of life respond? Well, Christina Bennett from Live Action will join me to talk about that a little bit later in the program. And as we emphasize creating a culture of life, there's an important new Family Research Council study that was released this week that reveals the benefits of perinatal hospice support for mothers. FRC's Mary Zock will join me to discuss more on that issue. And then there is a landmark announcement that has come from England's National Health Service. It's going to severely limit the prescription of puberty blockers for children. Well, the big question in all of this is, what is this going to mean for efforts to protect children worldwide from these experimental procedures? Dr. Jennifer Bowens, the director of the Center for Family Studies here at FRC, will join me to discuss that. So we've got a lot that we're bringing your way today. You don't want to miss it, but if by chance you do, I've already mentioned it once, but you can visit TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources as well as archive programs there for you. And one of those archive programs to be sure to catch is yesterday's show that came from Israel. All right, let's jump into today's issues more in depth. Democrat officials continue turning away from Israel. As I mentioned just a few moments ago, earlier today, Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer took to the Senate floor to deliver an extremely pointed speech against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He even called for a special election to replace the prime minister. And this also comes while Secretary of State Antony Blinken continues putting pressure on Israel from the Biden administration for Israel to not invade Rafah, which is the last remaining stronghold of Hamas. As the president's poll numbers, quite frankly, continue to sag, is the Biden administration meddling in another country's affairs just for political gain here? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Randy Weber. He serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, as well as the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Weber, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be here.
All right. Well, let's start with Chuck Schumer. I mean, here's the highest ranking Jewish elected official in U.S. history. And he has consistently been on the right of his party when it comes to Israel. Where in the world did this speech come from today?
Well, probably shouldn't say this, but if you're going to describe him using the word rank, it's probably not inappropriate in this particular time and juncture in the history. You're right. The highest rank, he can be pretty rank with his comments. Highest ranking official in U.S. history, American history, calling for Israel elections to what? Depose Benjamin Netanyahu? What nerve and what short-sightedness, and I would even add, what stupidity, in case he's forgotten. Israel didn't invade the Hamas regime, other way around.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. You know, you have to look at all this and come to the conclusion, this has nothing to do with Gaza, has nothing to do with anything other than political gain here at home. I just can't, from my perspective, wrap my brain around this with any other explanation. Your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Let me highlight. Here's how I highlight that, Jody. So he's calling for regime change. Really? For our best ally? I wonder where he is on Iran. I wonder where he is on Russia, on China. How about Hezbollah? How about Hamas? And if I can be so bold, tongue-in-cheek, to say, how about a regime change in the White House? This is ridiculous what they're doing to our best ally, Israel.
Yeah, it is stunning to me, which is what makes me think this is nothing more than politics. I mean, you look at how the president's doing in places like Minnesota and Michigan, where there are high populations of Muslims, and he is struggling in those states. It appears as though that might have a big factor with all of this. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure time will unfold what really is going on here with some of that. But it's hard not to have those considerations. I know the president mentioned, and quite frankly, his staff try to back away from this, but the president mentioned talk of a red line over Israel invading Rafah, which, again, that is the last stronghold of Hamas. And, you know, why in the world would the president, when Israel has come this far to eliminating Hamas, why would the president say, don't go into this last stronghold to get them?
Well, election year number one. Let me just repeat that, what he said. And don't miss this, folks. He threatens Netanyahu. He said, if Netanyahu remains in power, we're going to have to take a more active role. The U.S. got to take a more active role, and I'm like, as if that was even remotely possible. Think back, this Biden administration take more active. How did that work in Afghanistan? Yeah, and I want to argue about against something he said, that Netanyahu is fighting for his political survival. No, he's not. Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting for Israel's survival. You know, this is an existential threat to him. And so I just can't believe that Schumer would come out with something like this. But again, you pointed it out, it's an election year. I hope our Jewish friends around the country who normally might support Chuck Schumer might think twice about, or anybody, any Americans, anybody might think twice about supporting him.
Yeah, I can't help but think that the American people are seeing through this. As Secretary of State Blinken has now come out with another, I guess, related argument to all of this, saying that civilians should be Israel's top concern, not eliminating Hamas, but civilians. That needs to be the top concern of Israel. And yet, as you just mentioned, Israel's there fighting for their own survival. They are trying to prevent massacres like happened on October 7th from happening again. What do you take of Secretary Blinken's comments that civilians should be the top concern?
He's got it completely backwards in one way, shape, form, and fashion. Obviously civilians, but it's Israeli civilians that have to be held up and protected first and foremost. They've not made a practice on this describing that they wanted to kill every member of Hamas or every Palestinian or anything like that. Hamas has been dead set on the annihilation of Israel and Israelis, civilians, since day one. And so the secretary needs to realize that, yeah, there are some civilians that have to be protected. Nobody wants ill on women and children in other countries or in other groups. But Israel has to do what's right to protect their civilians, their way of life, and absolutely annihilate Hamas so that they cannot return and attack and kill, mutilate, torture, rape, and burn Israeli civilians again.
Yeah, it's a great point. One thing before we move on from this that we have all seen from the very beginning, the international community refuses to blame Hamas for all of this, and they continue blaming Israel for all the fighting that's taking place in Gaza. It's concerning to me to see the United States seemingly now jumping in the wagon with the rest of the international community opposing Israel. Is that what's happening from your perspective?
Well, absolutely, Jody. When you see the majority leader of the Senate do what he did today and then question Netanyahu, saying Netanyahu's doing this for political survival when it actually is for the survival of Israel, you know, tongue in cheek, it's Schumer's political survival that ought to be called into question here. What him, Anthony Blinken, and everybody else ought to be doing is calling for the Palestinian to rise up and throw Hamas out. And that's what they should be calling. The fact that they're not laying the blame at the feet of Hamas and wanting to, we don't want women and children killed, and the Palestinian women and children killed. We don't. But Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, in my opinion, if Netanyahu's on the right track, they've got to go on there and eradicate every last Hamas terrorist they can find.
We're not going to have time to respond to this, but I want to show this last clip as we go out of this segment. Please play clip 5 real quickly.
He just said in the briefing that, and we've been saying it for months, that there is no restriction on the amount of food and water that are able to be, that are allowed to be delivered into the Gaza Strip. Full stop.
That was a spokesman for Prime Minister Netanyahu. They are providing aid. What we are seeing, the response from the United States goes far beyond reality. Congressman Randy Weber, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you.
All right, friends, coming up, Kamala Harris went to an abortion facility today. She is the first sitting vice president to do so. We'll discuss more of it right after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony while he is in Israel. All right, earlier today, Vice President Kamala Harris went to an abortion mill in Minnesota. This marks the first time that a sitting vice president has toured a facility for killing babies. Friends, let that sink in. Our vice president today toured a facility killing babies. In case there was any doubt whatsoever whether pushing abortion is the central theme in the Biden reelection campaign or not. In fact, just remember, Biden himself kicked off his reelection campaign earlier this year at an event that he had a giant banner behind him reading Restore Road. Listen, they are making this the issue for them. And given the Democrats' extreme position on this, abortion all the way to birth, extreme position, while they call those of us who are pro-life extremists, they are going right down the Biden reelection playbook. And the question for us is, how should pro-life Christians respond? And will Republicans go on the offense to promote the sanctity of life? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Christina Bennett. She's a pro-life missionary who has served in various leadership roles for pro-life organizations. She is presently a correspondent for Live Action. Christina, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, I played this clip at the beginning of the program, but I don't know if you saw it. I want to play it again for you and get your reaction. This is from Vice President Harris and her remarks today at an abortion facility.
Many of you have asked, why am I here at this facility in particular? And I will tell you, it is because right now in our country, we are facing a very serious health crisis. And the crisis is affecting many, many people in our country, most of whom are, frankly, silently suffering.
Wow. Your reaction to that and the overall visit of the vice president today?
I would ask her, does 60 million dead babies count as a crisis? Does 20 million dead African-American children since Roe versus Wade in 1973 count as a crisis? And the millions of women who are suffering because of the pain of abortion, the millions of men who are also suffering in silence because the pain of abortion, does that also count as a crisis? It's disappointing. It's sad to see her visit an abortion facility and pretend that that is an organization that is helping women. In reality, that is an organization that has led to the deaths of thousands and thousands of children. And quite frankly, I'm embarrassed just to know that she, as our vice president, would support the abortion industry in this way. It's troubling.
It is so troubling. And listen, I think what you say, Christina, is spot on. The true crisis is the death of millions upon millions of babies. And now this administration and this whole party, quite frankly, continues to celebrate it. You know, we've seen the president's poll numbers sagging, and especially they're sagging among young voters. Do you think that this whole push for abortion, doubling down on it like they are right now, is their response to sagging poll numbers?
I would hope so, in part because I know that many Americans like myself, we vote pro-life. We want pro-life elected officials. We value life from the womb to the tomb. And we don't want to see our elected officials going to abortion clinics and parading around and pretending that that's a charity that's aiding women. In reality, we know that that industry has stolen so much from us as a community, and particularly the Black community. And so I would hope that voters would be aware of those things, and that come November that they would vote pro-life with pro-life conviction.
Absolutely. I think there's something to be said, perhaps at least, for the campaign here, the Biden reelect campaign, sending Harris and not President Biden on this visit to the abortion mill. Do you think, what do you make of that?
It's absolutely strategic because the abortion industry targets women of color primarily. That has been the way it's been since the beginning with Margaret Sanger and the Negro Project in the 1930s and 40s. Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry was founded on racism and eugenics and population control, and they have ever since targeted women of color. And so it's no mistake that she went there pretending to be an ally and hoping to really deceive and manipulate millions of women of color to think that this is an organization that supports our community, and it does not. Couldn't be any farther from the truth.
As you've well stated, over 20 million from the Black community is staggering numbers. Now, in the midst of all of this, Christina, the Democrats continue to accuse Republicans, pro-lifers, of being extreme on this issue, but nothing could be further from the truth.
I think it's extreme to dismember a child in the womb. I think it's extreme for a so-called doctor to piece apart a little baby's body and to look for an arm and to look for a leg after an abortion. What I want to ask the VP is, you know, how extensive was this tour? Did you go to the medical waste facility afterwards? Did you go to the incinerator? Did you see what happens to these little precious babies when their bodies are turned into dust and ashes and they're incinerated? I don't think she was willing to look that deep into the issue, but that's really what's happening here.
It really is. And this is a time where Republicans, pro-lifers, we've got to stand on this issue, not run from it. We've got to embrace the fact that we are the party of life. Agreed?
Oh, absolutely. We have to vote pro-life and without compromise. It's important for us to understand and to stand on this principle that a life is a life, whether the baby is 6 weeks in the womb or 16 weeks in the womb. They are all deserving of protection, no matter what stage of development this child is at. And we have to make that message very clear to all those running for office that we stand for life from conception all the way to the natural death.
Christina Bennett, I can't thank you enough for joining us on Washington Watch. All the work that you do and live action, all of you, fantastic. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. It's been an honor to have you on the program.
God bless you. Thank you for having me.
God bless you as well. All right, friends, after the break, the details from a new FRC study on helping mothers through perinatal hospice. You may not be familiar with that term. It's something you need to be familiar with. We'll bring it all your way right after this break. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you joining us today. All right, this week, FRC released the first phase results of an important new study. It involves 11 perinatal hospice programs that are offering support to mothers who choose to continue their pregnancies following a prenatal diagnosis indicating that their baby has some sort of life-limiting condition. Well, this report addresses a gap in the scientific literature by studying the experiences of these mothers and the resources that help them through their experiences. Well, joining me now to discuss the results of this study is Mary Zock. She's the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. Mary, always great to have you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's begin. Some people may not be familiar with the term perinatal hospice as a general rule. Why don't we start there? I don't know if I gave the full definition. Why don't you explain what this is?
Sure. A perinatal hospice program is a service that is provided for couples or women who have received an adverse perinatal diagnosis. So a lot of different terms are used to describe that diagnosis, sometimes fatal fetal anomaly, sometimes fetal anomaly, sometimes debilitating disability. There are a number of different terms that could be used there, but essentially it means that their unborn child that physicians don't believe that their unborn child will either live to birth or will live long after birth. A lot of times those physicians are wrong, and these babies do live longer, long lives. But a couple who receives that diagnosis is able to receive supportive services from a perinatal hospice that offers them a source of comfort in that there are other couples who are willing to speak with them who have also received a similar diagnosis. These organizations offer a way to navigate through the medical decisions. They offer more information about the diagnosis their child may have received. They offer a birth plan that could include alleviating any pain that their child may feel. They offer, very sadly, they offer funeral planning, which, as you can imagine, would be incredibly challenging for a couple facing this. And then following the death of the child or the birth of the child, they still offer services to support these couples. So they're really beautiful programs that really provide comfort and care and life-affirming support for couples.
And this is not something that's theoretical. It is something that is underway. Your study actually looked at the actual experiences of those who have been involved in perinatal hospice services. What did your study reveal? What was it, good news? What did you find out?
Well, there was some good and there was some bad. We found that over 50%, 55% of women, when they received their diagnosis that their unborn child had a fetal anomaly, their physician at that point recommended that they end the pregnancy, that they abort their unborn child. Mm. And we found that only 19% of those women received information about perinatal hospices at the same time. So we know that physicians aren't talking to moms and dads who receive this information about life-affirming options. What else we learned, though, was that we had an overwhelming percentage of women say that they were very confident in their decision to carry to term with the support of perinatal hospice. 85% of women said that. And in fact, zero women said that they were not at all confident in their decision to carry to term. So we know that when women have just a little bit of support through this very challenging cross that I can't even imagine how difficult it must be, we know that they recognize that choosing life for their child was the correct decision and that they can see the joy and the beauty even in the midst of great suffering.
So there is good news and bad news with all of this. What are the overall implications that you come away with from this study?
Well, we need more awareness about perinatal hospice. As I said, very few physicians actually recommended perinatal hospice for their patients. Around the country, we know that there are about 275 perinatal hospice programs, but in some states, there's only one, and in most states, there's five or fewer. And this is a resource that people need to be able to tap into, because that's a time when the cross is really heavy, and you need someone there to help you carry it. So what we can do with this is we can provide legislation that states that when a physician is giving a diagnosis of a fatal fetal anomaly, as they sometimes call it, or a life-limiting diagnosis, that physician would also have to tell the couple or the woman about the option of perinatal hospice, where that couple can be provided with real information about their child's diagnosis. And we can do this, and we can lift up these couples and surround them with love and support.
Mary, that is fantastic information. I have no doubt that many of our viewers and listeners right now have no idea that such a program even existed. I think it's a great start if we can get some legislation moving in this direction, but also people who are listening right now or watching right now need to be aware that these incredible services are available. So, Mary Zock, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Jody.
You bet. All right, friends, coming up, there is a major announcement from the National Health Service of England, where they are limiting the use of harmful puberty blockers for minors. You don't want to miss all this. We'll discuss it in greater detail right after the break, so stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. All right, stating that there is not enough evidence to support their safety or clinical effectiveness, the National Health Service of England announced late last week that it's going to limit the use of puberty-suppressing drugs, with a few exceptions, for children who are enrolled in clinical trials. Now, this move comes as research continues to dispel the lies that are being pushed by the pro-trans activists regarding these drugs, and as studies also reveal the harm that these drugs are causing children. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Jennifer Bowen. She's the director of the Center for Family Studies here at the Family Research Council. And by the way, prior to her work here at FRC, Dr. Bowen's worked as a clinician and researcher addressing the effects of psychological trauma, things like the traumatic events of 9/11 and that type of thing. So, Dr. Bowens, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
It's always good to be with you, Jody.
Well, listen, this is big news coming out of England. Some are describing this as a ban, but probably that's not completely accurate. Tell us what this decision actually does.
Yeah, basically what's going to happen now, and this, by the way, this follows the closure of the Tavistock Clinic in the UK, which was, of course, the clinic that did so-called treatment of gender dysphoria. And so this is another move to basically say that there really isn't enough evidence to dispense puberty blockers. And so the UK has decided that they'll basically offer puberty suppression in the context of clinical trials. Now, of course, we wish that that would be a full ban, and I mean, and really a full ban by no research, but this is a huge step towards seeing these terrible practices no longer be available, at least in one country here.
Yeah, and it's got to start somewhere, and how great that it's starting, you know, in England. I mean, this is, like you said, this is a huge decision. Now, it seems to me, well, really it is, the reality that the NHS is reverse course on this. I think we have all watched globally as the push for these transgender puberty blockers and surgeries and so forth have been, seems like just marching down Main Street. And now we're watching, particularly in Europe, some European countries beginning to pull back on this. Why the reverse course on this?
Yeah, and I think one reason that we're seeing so many European countries in particular pull back on these practices is, for one, they've been doing it longer than the U.S. In terms of having some kind of systematic approach. So what we're seeing now is when these countries actually look at the literature that's been used to support employing gender, so-called gender transition procedures, what we see is that they have to be honest, and they look at the evidence and they say, you know what, there really isn't evidence to support these practices. And that's one good thing that we're seeing in terms of honesty in the scientific discourse, because, gosh, we certainly haven't seen a lot of honesty over the last few years in a number of disciplines, but certainly when it comes to the transgender issue.
Yeah, that is so true. And across the board, it seems like we have seen so many instances in the last several years of the entire medical industry being used for political purposes rather than actual science and medicine for the good of people. Now, let's go back, if we can, Dr. Bowens, and just remind everyone, what are some of the negative effects that these drugs can actually have on young people, on children?
Well, there's more evidence in about the physiological harms, although we can certainly speculate about the psychological harms. But when we're talking about physiological harm, we're talking about cardiovascular issues, cancers, low bone density, hot flashes, infertility. And these things are pretty well established. And actually, more recently, there was a drop of files that looked at the WPATH's intercommunications. And the fact of the matter is that they are quite aware of these adverse side effects. But aside from that, Jody, I mean, you can imagine the psychological harms that can come just by halting somebody, you know, so-called halting somebody's puberty, because you can't really halt puberty. It's a developmental process, so you're interrupting something that that is a natural course that should be carried out. So, you know, you can think about the social ramifications of doing something like that, where a child would normally engage with the world around them and get a sense of their identity from that engagement. Well, these kids are encouraged to dissociate from the very essence of who they've been created to be. And that has enormous and immense implications. Just for example, we know that once kids go on to puberty blockers, it's almost assured that they will go on to cross-sex hormones. And then conversely, if you take a child who you just let them carry out, if they have gender distress, you just let that carry out, 85% of those kids will desist. So they won't go on to cross-sex hormones. So there are a number of implications here that are very detrimental, and they have little to no research to investigate those harms.
And we just need to constantly be aware of the authentic, true scientific effects and impact, the negative things that these medications will do. Another thing that gets me, and by the way, I'm glad you brought up the WPATH files. I want to get to that in just a moment, because I think there's a lot that needs to be unfolded and brought to light with those files. But before we get there, there's a lot of people that say these medications are reversible, even fully reversible. The Endocrine Society, for one, is saying that, but that's not true, is it?
It's absolutely not true. And all we have to do is look at Jazz Jennings, who's been, displayed for all the world to see. Unfortunately, what terrible abuse this child has gone through, and you know, there are certainly permanent effects of puberty blockers, just for one, not, let alone the cross-sex hormones. But when you're talking about puberty suppression, you're talking about sexual organs that do not have the opportunity to fully develop. And also, you're stopping the natural growth of a child's sexual organs. And so, of course, infertility is going to ensue. So how, you know, to say that you can reverse a process that you have halted is just insanity. And as you said, with these WPATH files, we find that they know that as well. They're aware. The WPATH members are quite aware of what they're doing, and they know that these procedures are irreversible and cause permanent damage.
Well, you know, I am just so encouraged with this that's come out of England. And as you mentioned, some other European countries, I know Sweden, Finland, for example, have made similar moves. And there are others that are in process. Even here in the United States, I think we have some 20 states now that have passed laws banning these puberty-blocking drugs and hormones. And some even have made it a felony for doctors to prescribe them. But do you think what's happened here with the UK in this announcement is going to provide more encouragement to slow down or perhaps even stop the momentum here in the United States for these puberty blockers?
I think this is great news, first of all. And I think that eventually it will be another thread that helps unravel this horrible ideology. Sometimes I've noticed, I'll speak as a clinician for a minute. Sometimes I've noticed when people come in for therapy, a lot of times the situation will get worse before it gets better, because there's actually, God is bringing about freedom. And so sometimes the things that get stirred up in a person's life will get worse before it does get better. And I think that we may see this in our nation as other countries and other revelations about malpractice become evident and become increasingly more evident, that we may see those on the other side try to hunker down even more and ignore the truth of what's being revealed. And so I think we can't be discouraged by that. We can't, because it eventually we will see this tumble. And as you said, we have 23 states now that have put in protections for children.
Wow. Well, I'm with you. This is fantastic news, and I think it does bring a lot of encouragement. You've brought up a couple of times the WPATH files. Tony actually discussed this last week. I think these files really expose, by the way, the WPATH stands for the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And there were some files that were leaked, and Tony talked about these. I would love to get your opinion about all of this. I think that also is huge news, the information that came forth from those leaked files.
Yeah, and what a gift. Now, these files don't tell us anything in one sense that we don't already know, but it is a huge admission of the fact that they also know that this is pseudoscience, that that they're employing practices that really do not allow for informed consent. And the whole scientific process has really nothing to do with evidence. In fact, we have both medical malpractice and scientific or research malpractice at hand here, and that's what we're looking at. One of the things that I would say was most telling to me and most disturbing was to see the level of mental health issues that are going on with the people that gender therapists are treating, and that they're observing these huge mental health conditions that merit further investigation. Instead of really treating the root issue, they're bypassing that and just going for cross-sex hormone surgeries, et cetera. And that is really disturbing when you talk about people who have huge dissociative issues from probably childhood traumas or other types of traumas, and those are not getting treated, and instead they're being masked by this ideology. So that's quite sad to me as a clinician to see people who are in the field that would ignore that, and they should know better.
They certainly should. You mentioned the whole issue that came forth or surrounding informed consent. Mm-hmm. I actually have a clip here that I'd like to play for you. This is a trans activist, Jameson Green, who could not deny exactly what you're saying. Let's play the clip, please.
And I know for a fact, people, even adults, even well-educated, older adults accessing care for the first time, sit down with the person who's going to prescribe their hormones, and they look at an informed consent form that says your hormones are going to do this, this, and this. They don't make any of that in because they're so scared that they're not going to get what they need. They just so show me where to sign. Because I'm, this is my moment, I got to grab it. And they don't really take in the information.
Wow. Yeah, it should concern everybody, especially children. These kids are consenting to things that they don't even have the ability to understand. Give me your reaction to that clip.
Yeah, in this case, he's talking about an adult. But what you hear, the observation of desperation and the people coming for this type of so-called care, they're desperate. And so they're willing to sign anything. And this is where, if it was a good practice, you would see a therapist or a medical professional taking time and really doing a thorough assessment and waiting before even attempting to start some kind of practice like this. But you don't. You see this rush to onboard people to what is the most invasive practice that I've ever seen and has been in our recent days in the psychological fields. And I know another case where this gender therapist was saying, I worked with a person for about a year, and, of course, they had already onboarded them to all the gender ideology stuff, and the person revealed that they had been sexually assaulted, and that was one of their primary issues. So, not the right treatment for these huge conditions that people are dealing with.
Absolutely, and it just seems to me that these files really confirm the fact that WPATH in itself does not even meet the standards of evidence-based medicine. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they do not meet the standards of evidence-based medicine because the research just isn't there to support it. That's number one. But also, and I've testified about this as well, they don't have the proper measures to discern is somebody, really transgender, are they non-binary, are they fluid? Which, for us, we recognize that those concepts are fallacious. We believe in binary sex. But even if it were true, you should be able to measure and be able to predict who is going to benefit from your treatment. That's part of evidence-based practice. And you don't see that
Absolutely.
In this case.
Dr. Jennifer Bowens, thank you so much for your input. We appreciate it so much. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. Thank you so much. The scripture tells us that an anxiety in the heart brings about depression, but we have good news. God never leaves us or forsakes us. We'll see you tomorrow here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.